Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namini Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaudavani Pracharine Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskacha Rishatarine. So we're reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter, Canto 10, chapter 1, text number 58. Kim dusaham nusadhunam I thought I would read the whole thing first, and then we'll do line by line, just so I can get the hang of it, too. Kim dusaham nusadhunam Okay, all right. Vidusam kim apekshitam Kim akaryam kadaryanam Duscha jam kim dritatmanam kim dusaham nusadhunam vidusham kim apekshitam kim makaryam kadaryanam duscha jam kim dritatmanam. Gentlemen, Sham Nukadunam Duscha Jam Kim Dritatmanam Kim dusasam nasadunam vidusam kim apekshitam kim makaryam kadayanam duscha jam kim dritatmanam kim dusasam nasadunam Vidusham kim apekshitam kim makaryam kadayanam duscha jam kim dritatmanam kim dusaksam nukadanam vidusham kim apekshitam kim makaryam kadayanam Tuscharam kim dirtatmanam. Ladies. Sadasadunam. Vidusam kim apekshitam. Kim makaryam sadananam. Tuscharam kim dirtatmanam. Vidusham kim apekshitam kim makaryam kadayanam tasudam nam yunatmanam kim dusaham nasadudam vidusham kim apekshitam Kim makaryam kadayanam duschajam kim dritatmanam kim what is dusaham painful nu indeed sadhunam for saintly persons vidusham of learned persons. Kim apekshitam. What is dependence? Kim akaryam. What is forbidden work? Kadaryanam. Of persons in the lowest grade. Duschajam. very difficult to give up. Kim, what is? Dhritatmanam, of persons who are self-realized. Translation and purport by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. What is painful for saintly persons who strictly adhere to the truth? How could there not be independence for pure devotees who know the Supreme Lord as the substance? What deeds are forbidden for persons of the lowest character? And what cannot be given up for the sake of Lord Krishna by those who have fully surrendered at his lotus feet? Purport. Since the eighth son of Devaki was to kill Kamsa, one might ask what the need was for Vasudeva to deliver the firstborn child. The answer is that Vasudeva had promised Kamsa that he would deliver all the children born of Devaki. Kamsa, being an asura, did not believe that the eighth child would kill him. He took it for granted that he might be killed by any of the children of Devaki. Vasudeva, therefore, to save Devaki, promised to give Kamsa every child, whether male or female. From another point of view, Vasudeva and Devaki were very pleased when they understood that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, would come as their eighth son. Vasudeva, a pure devotee of the Lord, was eager to see Krishna appear as his child from the eighth pregnancy of Devaki. Therefore, he wanted to deliver all the children quickly so that the eighth turn would come and Krishna would appear. He begot one child every year so that Krishna's turn to appear would come as soon as possible. Let's see how we can do this. So just to give a little background of this verse for those of you here or in cyberspace have not been following along the Srimad Bhagavatam classes day by day. While Devaki and Vasudeva were processing in public on a chariot driven by Devaki's brother Kamsa in honor of their wedding day, suddenly there comes this voice sounded in the sky, and it's announcing, "Kamsa, you are such a fool. You are driving the chariot of your sister and your brother-in-law, but you do not know that the eighth child of this sister will kill you." Kamsa then immediately he grabs Devaki by the hair with one hand, and he draws his sword with his other hand, and he's preparing to kill her right on the spot. And Vasudeva is so astonished at Kamsa's behavior, and meanwhile he's feeling it's his responsibility to protect his wife Devaki. He immediately tries to pacify his cruel and shameless brother-in-law, Kamsa, by saying, "My dear brother-in-law, you are the most famous king of the Bhoja dynasty, and people know that you are the greatest warrior and a valiant king. How is it that you are so infuriated that you are prepared to kill a woman who is your own sister at this auspicious time of her marriage? Why should you be so much afraid of death? Death is already born along with your birth. From the very day you took your birth, you began to die. If you are 25 years old, that means you have already died 25 years. At every moment, at every second, you are dying. Why then should you be so much afraid? You may die either today or in 100 years. But you cannot avoid death, so why should you be so much afraid?" So Prabhupada comments in his Krishna book that actually death is only the annihilation of our physical bodies. As soon as our body stops functioning, the living entity accepts another body according to the results of their actions and their reactions. Prabhupada explains in other places that death is just like closing your eyes at night And when you open them again, you're there at your next destination. And this next destination could be another body, or if you're very fortunate, your next destination could be with Krishna in Krishna's abode. Prabhupada says, just like when a man walks on the street, he puts forward his foot, and when he is confident that his foot is situated on sound ground, he lifts the other foot. And in this way, one after another, the body changes and the soul transmigrates. So in this verse, Krishna is about to appear very soon, and Kamsa is showing his character by his response to Krishna's impending appearance through his very reactive behavior. Kamsa immediately tries to defend himself without pausing to reflect on what he's doing. And this kind of reactive defending is one of the characteristics of an animal. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. He's defending. Just like if you step on a dog's tail, they will likely growl, or they might bite you even. Kamsa's real nature is manifesting as a person who is completely bewildered by the modes of passion and ignorance. In non-threatening circumstance, a materialistic person may appear to have their lives under control, or they may appear to be very peaceful or happy. But the way they respond to an unexpected life change or a life crisis will tell you how deeply rooted is their faith. Do they respond by trying to defend against what is occurring in their current circumstances? Or are they embracing what is happening to them in their current circumstances as Krishna's mercy? Krishna explains that such a materially conscious person does not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. So in this way, Kamsa, he's immediately swinging into action when he hears the prediction coming from a voice in the sky. He does not pause to consider whether the voice he hears is true or not. For all practical purposes, it could be a rumor or simply his imagination. Kamsa also doesn't consider how what is being predicted by the voice is the result of his own past activities. He is simply terrified at the prospects of his death, and ready to do any forbidden thing to save himself, even if it means killing a family member. And typical of any conditioned soul who tries to control their external reality in the hopes that by doing so they will never be defeated, that they will live forever, instead of blaming himself for bringing about his own destruction, he immediately looks for someone else to blame. And this person happens to be his own sister, Devaki. Prabhupada used to say, do not blame the agents who deliver your karma, because actually you are the cause of your own suffering. So Kamsa's reactive behavior is due to his being completely controlled by the modes of passion and ignorance. He does not see that his own destruction is caused by his offensive behavior. And what's underneath his defensive behavior is his deep-seated fear of death. That's what's driving him. This fear is that at the heart of every conditioned soul. Every one of us are striving to somehow overcome death. Since most of us are clearly not completely surrendered souls, we're kind of mixed devotees, we can include ourselves in the same striving as Kamsa for self-preservation. And our denial that we could die at every moment. We're all walking around hoping, we're making plans for tomorrow, the next day, and the next year, and the next month, hoping that we might live to see our plans fulfilled. And there's so many ways that we can avoid this fact, either in gross ways or in subtle ways, denying that we actually are dying every moment. Prabhupada uses this example of a rabbit who thinks if he closes his eyes, the hunter won't see him. And in the same way, we think that if we ignore the fact that we will die, we will somehow get out of here alive. And that's not going to happen. We're just waiting, waiting for that moment. So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, not a blade of grass moves without the sanction of the Supreme. And for such a person like Kamsa, who has strived to avoid serving Krishna their whole life, denying Krishna's existence in their life in so many ways, finally, Krishna appears to them as cruel death. There's no more denying God at this moment. Death comes and forces them to surrender. They have no choice. Vasudeva, on the other hand, is showing us the character of a pure devotee whose only behavior is to help Krishna appear in the world as soon as possible. He's yearning for Krishna's appearance because he knows he is the only person who can subdue the demons that are now overtaking the world. But Vasudeva is not afraid. He knows that Krishna is in control in this very moment. Even with Kamsa raising his sword, he knows that Devaki's protection isn't dependent on his efforts because she is a pure devotee of Krishna, and he trusts Krishna to protect his devotees. So different than Kamsa, Vasudeva is not reactive. He's not acting out of fear, but he responds with a clear strategy. He's armed with yoga. He's firmly grounded in his faith in Krishna. And rather than counter-attacking Kamsa, he attempts to calm his fears through reason and making a promise to deliver all of Devaki's children to him, even though it is her eighth child who is destined to kill him. So Vasudeva, he's setting an example for us regarding the importance of a person's performing their duty despite knowing that everything is already in the hands of the Supreme Lord. So this whole verse is actually glorifying Vasudeva's pure character by contrasting it with the demonic character of Kamsa. So to repeat the verse, there are four questions. What is painful for saintly persons who strictly adhere to the truth? How could there not be independence for pure devotees who know the Supreme Lord as the substance? What deeds are forbidden for persons of the lowest character? And what cannot be given up for the sake of Lord Krishna by those who have surrendered at his lotus feet? So what actually is the meaning of the first question? What is painful for saintly persons who strictly adhere to the truth? For a surrendered devotee or a saintly person, it is more painful to live in separation of Krishna than to gain all kinds of material comforts. It is more painful to live outside of Krishna's protection. And once having taken shelter of Krishna, a saintly person is prepared to undergo any kind of painful condition if he knows it will give Krishna pleasure. This is the character of Vasudeva, that he was prepared to let Kamsa kill seven of his children, one after the other, in order to make way for Krishna to appear in this world. And this is the qualification of devotee. The next question being asked in this verse is, how could there not be independence for pure devotees who know the Supreme Lord as the substance? So a devotee is naturally independent of external material considerations because they know that everything perceived by their gross senses is merely a shadow of what is real, or the substance. They know that everything that is going on in this material world is merely a reflection of the spiritual realm that is unchanging and indestructible. So a devotee is not dependent on any material circumstances to determine their actions. They are only dependent on the order of Krishna and his pure representative to guide their way forward. And by their absolute dependency on the only dependable substance there is, Sri Krishna, they become truly independent of any other influences to guide their way forward. So in that sense, they become truly free from the binding forces of the material nature. So this is what it means to truly be independent, to be completely dependent on Krishna. So this is the whole purport of the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna is putting forward so many reasons why he cannot fight based on some external material circumstances. He doesn't want to harm his family members or his revered teachers. He doesn't want to commit a sinful act that might make his own life miserable in the future. He is afraid of bringing about the destruction of family traditions. He is afraid of what will happen to the future generation if the elders and women of the family are not protected, and so many other reasons. But Krishna promises him, "Don't worry, I will protect you and everyone related to you if you just surrender to me. Trust me. Everything will turn out all right. Not just all right. It will turn out in a way that is so amazing that you cannot even imagine. Miracles will start to happen in your life." This is the dilemma each one of us is facing because we doubt Krishna's words. We take shelter of our minds that constantly tell us, "Wait a minute. If I surrender to Krishna, my life will not be as comfortable as I'd like it to be. And I might not like Krishna's plan for me. And my family and friends, they may criticize me for not following their lifestyle or values. Or they might talk about me behind my back in unkind words. Or they may try to stop me. Or they might not leave me my inheritance." There are unlimited excuses why we cannot increase our service to Krishna. But Vasudeva is showing by his example that if you invest your entire energy in bringing Krishna into the world, in raising the Krishna consciousness of the world, then your life will become wonderful in ways that you could never imagine. The third question that glorifies Vasudeva is, "And what cannot be given up for the sake of Lord Krishna by those who have fully surrendered at his lotus feet?" We've pretty much already explained the meaning of this question. It's basically saying, by using rhetorical question, that for a person whose life is completely surrendered to Krishna, there's nothing they cannot let go of for the satisfaction of Krishna. Because once a person has made Krishna the most important thing, everything pales in comparison. There is nothing they won't let go of for the satisfaction of the Lord. Finally, in the fourth question, is a description of Kamsa's character. A person who is completely bewildered by the material energy. What deeds are forbidden for persons of the lowest character? And we can practically see that Kamsa is prepared to do anything in order to deny Krishna's existence. He's willing to even kill his sister, who he is supposed to be protecting. In this Kali Yuga, Krishna is appearing as Lord Chaitanya. His Sankirtan mission, his holy name, his bona fide representatives, the Bhagavad Gita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, sanctified food, and the assembly of devotees. And the personality of Kamsa today is represented in those persons who are determined to prevent Krishna's name, form, pastimes, and paraphernalia from increasing in the world more and more. We also need to remember that the personality of Kamsa is also embedded within our own hearts when we become bewildered by the modes of passion and ignorance. And the only way to kill this demonic mentality within the world is to kill this demonic mentality within our own hearts. And the only way to kill the demonic mentality in our own hearts is by constantly meditating on how we can kill the demonic mentality of the world. Striving more and more to hear, chant, remember, and serve, and to help others hear, chant, remember, and serve. Like Vasudeva, a Vaishnava sets the example of how to make Krishna the center of their lives. And by doing so, our demonic Kamsa mentality becomes destroyed. And the effect is that we become a catalyst for destroying the demonic mentality in the lives of others. So, I'm going to stop here and take any questions or comments. Thank you very much. Anybody have any comments or reflections? I'm feeling myself a little overwhelmed at this moment. I don't know why. But I'd be happy to churn it if anybody has any thoughts. Yeah. Is there a microphone? Because I suspect there's people in the flower room who are doing garlands and they might want to hear your question.
In the passage, they mentioned that there are certain activities should be abandoned or should be avoided, right?
I'm not sure.
Low nature people.
I'm not sure I understand what your question is.
In the passage,
yeah,
there was a statement which was mentioning the low nature people should avoid certain activities.
Avoid the 10 activities.
Certain activities.
Certain activities. And who are those people who should avoid certain activities?
That's what I was not clear on the passage. If you read out the passage, I can illustrate it.
Oh, the last question. Well, it was basically referring to Kamsa, wasn't it? What kinds of forbidden things? My computer is kind of closed here. Let's see. Sorry. The last question was, what deeds are forbidden for persons of the lowest character? This is a question that is rhetorical. It's not saying that people of lowest character should not practice certain things. What it's saying is that a person who is of a very low character will not stop at anything. They will do anything to prevent Krishna from appearing. That's the question. That's the what deeds. What are they? They will be prepared to do all kinds of forbidden things that are not acceptable, even in mundane moral society, like killing your own sister because you're afraid that in the future one of her children might kill you. That's the question. It's not giving a list of things you shouldn't do. Basically, we should live like Vasudeva. Does that make sense? Yeah. Anything else? Question? Comment? Yes.
Hare Krishna. How to deal with two different statements in our life? One is, Prabhupada said that in a moment you can completely surrender to Krishna, just in 1 second, if you want it. Is your free will. Another one is usually gradual process.
The what? So the gradual process?
Usually gradual process.
Yeah.
You know, most of us. Well, is it some kind, can you give maybe some kind of organizational advice or some thoughts about how to, you know, come to the, you know, what's the relationship with these two and how you can go mostly into direction to surrender immediately?
Immediately, in moment to moment.
Yeah, yeah.
You mean to be constantly in the present moment.
Mm-hmm.
And my personal technique or strategy to help me remember Krishna in the moment is to ask always, okay, what is my duty now? And now what is my duty? And now what is my duty now? Being aware that I may not have another moment, and knowing that when we are aware that death can come and will come at any moment, that our whole life then becomes a priority. We are prioritizing. You triage, just like in the hospital. The person comes in the emergency room, and the one who is the most sick gets the attention. So we're kind of on a battlefield here, all the time struggling to resist being overcome by the modes of passion and ignorance. So it takes a lot of self awareness and self introspection to cop yourself on, to be honest with yourself. Okay, what am I doing right now? Why am I doing this? Who am I doing it for? What should I be doing? What would be more pleasing to Krishna right now? And that means knowing what is pleasing to Krishna. And the only way we can know that is by consulting the words of the founder Acharya of our movement, is to know what is the most pleasing thing to Prabhupada. And then putting that on the scale and weighing, okay, is what I'm doing now, is that if Prabhupada is standing here, right? The other thing that is helpful is to be aware that Prabhupada is still present today. He's aware of us. He's watching us and reciprocating with us. So, like Christians will say, what would Jesus do? Imagine Prabhupada is sitting here hearing you say what you are just saying, or watching you do what you're doing now. It would be it's very embarrassing when you look on yourself through the eyes of the pure devotee. So those are just some things that help me, and I'm not sure I got it yet. So, anything else? Reflection? Doesn't have to be a question. Some takeaway from today? Any thought that hit you that may be a keeper? Nothing? Okay.
We are dealing here with two personalities.
We're dealing with two personalities.
Yeah, one who represents evil, the other one is good character, behavior, a sadhu, a saintly person. And the behavior is totally opposite, conflicts. So bringing that to our own personal life, we also have, like you were mentioning, we should see our kansa within us. We had that in different levels. So sometimes focusing, sometimes in prachar, preaching, and you neglect the achar, the behavior, or the attitude. I would like to see if you could speak in that regard, if you can expand. How will you balance? Sometimes you think, I'm going full force, but then you also need to reflect what is the quality of that.
Yeah.
Message that you try to give when you yourself practically speaking are neglecting the basics of certain issues of character, because that's stronger sometimes than going out there, than making that appeal that sometimes people are waiting for, that quality of who's behind speaking, or who's telling me this, or why this person is giving me a book, or why this person wants to give me this message.
I would say that good character simply comes from being situated in the mode of goodness. And if you study the different modes, the quality of ignorance, passion, and the behaviors that, if you look in Bhagavad Gita, there's so many different behaviors. Mode of ignorance, you know, sleep, being expert at insulting others. Mode of passion, you know, being busy with work. And then you have this notion that a person in the mode of goodness sees things as they are. Krishna instructs Arjuna, stand armed with yoga. First you have to ground yourself in yoga. It means hearing, chanting, and remembering. There has to be an absorption, hearing and associating with Krishna's words. And if we are doing that, then everything else will follow. Good character. We can notice ourselves, though, when the mode of passion takes over, and pause and say, okay, why am I, I feel like I'm being really overreactive right now. I mean, in the work I do, I have to pay very close attention to what is my inner dialogue in watching the behaviors of my students. And so it's very helpful to notice in yourself, gosh, I feel like I'm really over-responding right now, or I'm really working hard, or I'm talking a lot. You know, why am I talking so much? You know, the kind of thing. You have to turn that same vision, discernment, that judgment that you project out to other people, turn it back into yourself, and ask yourself this. You know, this is. It's not feeling that I'm united with Krishna in this moment. It's me talking. It's not me repeating Krishna's words. It's not me aligning myself with Krishna. But my sense is that until we get situated in the mode of goodness, it's all going to come out wonky. And that takes a lot of time. And so there's processes, serving Krishna, preaching, even if it comes out bumpy. Keep doing it, you know, chant better. I mean, it's a long process, you know. You just keep on doing it. If you stay in the process, Krishna will show you. You know, somebody will come punch you on Sankirtan. You'll think, oh, what am I supposed to understand? What did I say? You might reflect better, you know. But really, it's about getting situated in the mode of goodness. And that was Prabhupada's whole mission, to free the whole world from these two modes that are keeping us completely imprisoned in our minds and our hearts. And this is the process. Just stay in the fire. That's the best I could do. Anything else? All right, thank you very much. Jai Srila Prabhupada. Thank you.